This week's episode of War Rocket Ajax is brought to you by Bald Eagle Comics. Now, folks, let's be real with each other. Let's be 100%. Comics are an expensive habit to have. We know that you're trying to save money on your favorite comic books, and we have found a great store to help you do that. Bald Eagle Comics is an online comic shop where everything, that's right, everything is marked down by 20%. That is a standing discount on everything they sell. And in addition to that, they also have weekly deals that can help you save up to 70% off on all of your favorites. The savings don't just apply to back issues. You get the same deals on Marvel and DC new releases as they come out.
Now, with these kinds of discounts, you may be thinking that Bald Eagle is going to charge you a pretty penny for shipping. Like, you know, some online comics retailers tend to do. But that's not so with Bald Eagle. Shipping is just $3 for your entire order. And if you spend $50 or more, you get your shipping for absolutely free. As collectors, you know, we all have that feeling where it's like, I want my comics to come to me in great condition. Your comics will arrive totally safely. They come from Bald Eagle with a free bag and board, and they are shipped in special bend-proof packaging.
That's right. This isn't just a great deal for you. They are also supporters of this show. So the folks at Bald Eagle Comics are doing a special deal just for our listeners. So listen closely. I'm gonna get close up on the mic here. You can get all the comics in their online store right now for half price, 50% off. Just use the coupon code AJAX. That is all capital letters AJAX, like the name of this show. 50% off on your order. That's baldeaglecomics.com. Go buy some comics. They're half off.
Use the coupon code AJAX when you check out.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That's War Rocket Ajax. To bring back his body.
Everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax, the 275th episode of War Rocket Ajax. In fact, this is the internet's most destructive and dangerous pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims, and with me as always is Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, happy second week of Halloween, buddy.
Yes, what a wonderful second week of Halloween it is, and what a special episode we have for everyone this week. 275 is a special episode because we have as our guest calling in from the famed, the infamous Clown Motel in Nevada, Christopher Sabella, who is living there for a month. He has been there for 10 days as we record this, and we're going to hear about all his experiences, the many weird experiences that he has had in the Clown Motel. I am so excited.
I'm going to go ahead and tell everybody, it's a disturbing phone call. We will get to that shortly. But before we do that, we've got a little bit of bookkeeping that we are obliged to do, Matt. Is that correct?
Obliged and pleased to do.
Thrilled, even.
It's time for us to say thanks to our newest Patreon supporters.
That's right, Matt. These are people who have gone over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and thrown in a couple bucks every month to help us keep the lights on and pay those gimmicks they keep sending in the mail called bills. I want to remind everybody, we have hit our latest milestone goal. So the Every Story Ever episodes are double-sized now. Thank you for that. Thank you so much. We have not settled on our next milestone goal, but if you have suggestions, feel free to reach out. We only need a couple thousand more dollars a month before I can just drop off the grid and move to a tiny house somewhere. Maybe sail off into the ocean and do the podcast from international waters.
Maybe you can move into to a bunker in Mexico, like Jesse the Body, the Mind, Ventura.
Does he live in a bunker in Mexico?
I believe that is the premise of his TV show, Off the Grid. I may be completely wrong about that. Because
he was the governor of a state.
All I know about Jesse Ventura is what I hear from James Adomian's impression of him. So,
all right, real quick, just while you're loading up the names of our Patreon supporters, I'm going to look up Jesse Ventura bunker real quick. You know, this is just his conspiracy theories and his the secret underground bunkers that he believes other people have. So, Matt, who do we have to thank this week?
All right. Here are our newest Patreon supporters. Benjamin Long.
Oh, thank you, Benjamin.
Philip Ginder.
Thank you, Philip. I think no, he is a longtime listener, I believe. I believe it's Ginder.
Ginder, okay. Philip, I apologize for mispronouncing your last name.
I also apologize for possibly mispronouncing your last name.
Miles Lobdell.
Oh, thank you, Miles.
And those are our newest supporters on Patreon. Thank you to all of them and to all our other Patreon supporters. You are the guys and women who keep this show going, and we appreciate you immensely.
Another bit of bookkeeping before we move on. We are pleased to announce that War Rocket Ajax is going to be part of the Secret Convergence on Infinite Podcasts podcast crossover. There are 9 shows involved. It's us. It's Rachel and Miles Explain the X-Men. It's Fan Bros. It's House to Astonish. It's Journey into Misery. It's a bunch of podcasts.
We're episode 8 in the order. So we're not going to be coming in until coming toward the end of November. We will be publishing our part in the Secret Convergence on Infinite Podcasts in the very, very near future.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Basically, it's a bunch of podcasts kind of swapping hosts. Hosts of one show go on different shows, and we all have a really fun conversation on a variety of topics. If you like this show, and you're not already listening to shows like Rachel and Miles, shows like Journey into Misery, shows like Into It with Elle Collins, which is definitely one you should be checking out. You should definitely check them out when we go on them, when they come on here, and it's going to be really, really fun. I don't think anyone has done a big podcast crossover like this before, and I just want to say real quick that Al Kennedy of House to Astonish is the brain behind this and has done so much work, and it was an absolute blast to record our episode. Can't wait for everybody to hear it. And yeah, so keep an eye out for that happening.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Keep an eye out for it. All right, Chris, now it's time to do some checks and wrecks, so let's do it. So come on and diggity-jack yourself before you wreck yourself. So Chris, your check this week is about some catastrophic weather, I believe.
Yes. Now, as we alluded to last week, I have basically spent the past week in my apartment thanks to Hurricane Joaquin, which thankfully took a sharp right turn and went back out into the ocean. We had a huge amount of rainfall here in South Carolina, flooding pretty much everywhere, especially in the Midlands. And I do want to thank everybody who reached out and emailed or sent us a tweet or anything, making sure I was okay. I'm fine. The worst that happened here was that we discovered we have a little leak in our roof, so there's a little bit of water damage on the ceiling now that I was sure to immediately notify the landlord about. And we had to boil our water from Monday to today, basically. My neighborhood got off really easy on the flood. Other parts of my hometown were flooded pretty badly. Columbia got really hit hard. Some dams broke. There was a lot of flooding. A couple things that I wanted to mention. My dojo flooded. My martial arts school. So there was no class on Monday.
But Dojo himself didn't flood.
Dojo himself didn't flood. And I said it was very disappointing to me that the school flooded, because that meant that Dojo must have failed in his battle against the weather itself. and it was suggested to me, I believe, by our good friend Ben Gully that, you know, he probably realized that there are forces one man should not tamper with.
My theory is that he fought the weather to a draw. And that's why the rain eventually left.
The thing is, I was scheduled for a convention this past weekend in Columbia, like a local show, local first-year show. I ended up canceling. Like, we were looking at the weather, Aiden and I, we were looking at the weather, and we're like, yeah, best case scenario is that we get up there and we can't come home. So we'll have to get a hotel, but then we'll be getting a hotel while everything's flooding. And then it's just, yeah, it's not worth it. And then Saturday rolled around, and it was just rainy. And I, like, all day, like, I was texting Chad all day because Chad ended up going, he only lived, like, across town from where the convention was. So Chad was texting me, like, yeah, it's rainy and it's gloomy, but there's a bunch of people here. Everybody showed up. The weather's not too bad. It wasn't bad driving here. And so I felt like, I really felt like I was already kind of anxious and, like, worried about stuff and... like, I felt like I was letting him down, you know, not showing up to the convention, even though there was a act of God going on. And then I was like, all right, look, this thing has obviously been blown out of proportion by the news.
By the mainstream media.
By the mainstream media. So, you know, I'm going to go to bed, and then when I wake up tomorrow, I might drive up. So that was on Saturday. On Sunday... the road that I would have driven on to get to that convention center and to get home was literally under 5 feet of water, and buildings were collapsing on that street. So I feel like I made the right choice. I'm sorry to anyone who might have come to the convention hoping to see me. He saw Chad and said, and he's great. So like I said, I am safe. My mom is safe. Chad and his family are fine. There was flooding all around us all, but none of my family and friends got hit. So things were pretty rough and continue to be a little bit, you know, there were fatalities during the flood, which is awful. There was a lot of damage to places, which is really terrible, especially for the small businesses. But I'm okay, and I wanted to thank everybody who reached out to check on me. Matt, you did. I know you texted.
I did. And I have a little side part of this story as well. My mom was actually on her way to Myrtle Beach on Saturday as the torrential downpour was happening. My mom, who has had a tough past few months, remind me to talk on the show about the 200 bats that live in her attic at some point.
Okay. Now, is your mother sitting in her study asking how she can make them afraid?
None of them flew through the window, unfortunately. Okay. But there are a ton of bats living in her attic, and she was finally going to go to the beach for a relaxing trip after a very difficult few months. And it's right as all this catastrophic flooding is happening. She did call me today and say that she's actually having a good time at Myrtle Beach. Just some of the roads are closed because they're still flooded out. But that added an extra layer of worry about that flooding because my mom was on the way to Myrtle Beach as it was happening.
So, Matt, you meanwhile, you're on a mountain.
I am. I
you
live
don't have to worry about any
in
of
mountains.
This.
There were some floods around here, but nothing to the level of what was going on around you. So,
what is your check this week?
Okay, I have a couple things that I want to bring up. One, I want to bring up because I always forget to do these things, and you talking about a convention reminded me of it. I am going to be at the one-day Asheville Comic Expo at the U.S. Cellular Center on October 24th. I will be there with Copernicus Jones single issues, hopefully with Copernicus Jones trade paperbacks, because I should have those by then. Those are at the printers and should be back by the time that convention happens. I will also be there with the artist on Copernicus Jones, Kevin Warren. He's going to be there with me for that day. We're going to be signing books together. We're going to be at the table together. So if you are anywhere in the area and you want to come to Asheville for a day, come hang out on October 24th at the Asheville Comic Expo. I will be there with Kevin Warren, and it should be a great time. Barring any catastrophic weather, I hope I haven't jinxed myself. My other check is that this podcast that we are recording right now, number 275, this is the 227th War Rocket Ajax that I have recorded. It is the first, outside of some of the episodes that we've recorded on our phones or remotely, it is the first that I have not recorded on the iMac I've been using for 5 years. Now, you'll notice that sometimes when we record this show, there are Skype problems. What you may not hear were the computer problems that I was having, where GarageBand would just suddenly decide to stop recording, and I would get a message that said, disk is too slow. That it got to the point where I could not have a browser open on my computer while I was recording the show because it was taking too much of the memory of the computer or the processing power or something. That got even worse as I continued to update OS X. Like once I got to Yosemite, there was no way I could keep anything open while I had GarageBand open. So if I was asking questions or looking at Twitter or doing anything while recording the show, I had to do it on my phone. Now I have a browser open, I'm recording the show, and I don't feel heat coming off the computer in front of me because I have a new iMac that I ordered with the help of our Patreon supporters. It's like kind of our first big purchase specifically for the show. Due to that backing, we have a computer that I can actually record the show on and not have to worry about it just giving out on me in the middle of recording a show. So I am so pleased with it. The recording has been so smooth so far, and it's just a nice machine, this new iMac that I have. So thank you again to our Patreon supporters for making this a possibility. I was getting so worried about recording the show on my other computer. We will have a computer on which to record the show for well into the foreseeable future, this show and Movie Fighters. So thank you, everybody. Hopefully recording will go really smoothly for a long time into the future because of this new computer. All right, Chris, let's make some recommendations. What do you have to recommend?
Well, in addition to some amazing new Mario Maker levels that I played, one of which was a Mario 3 or Mario 1 version of Mad Max Fury Road. And I think the same person also made a Mario version of Smokey and the Bandit. It was pretty great.
That sounds wonderful.
This whole week, the MMA dojo was closed. My regular gym was closed. Like I had to boil water, so I couldn't just, you know, fill up my water bottle and do exercise here. So I just binge watched a bunch of TV. I ended up watching the entire third season of Elementary. Now, Matt, have you watched Elementary?
I have not. I hear it's very good.
Yeah, it really is. It sounds like it would be terrible because it's a CBS police procedural about Sherlock Holmes, but it's actually really great. I remember, like, I think Chad had watched the very first episode when it came on, and he was telling me about it, and it sounded atrocious, so I never watched it. But it's a show that Aiden really likes, and she wanted to catch up on the last season before the new one starts in November. And first of all, I did not realize Zero Cool from Hackers was playing Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, it's Johnny Lee Miller is Sherlock Johnny Holmes Lee on Miller. The show.
And I knew that Lucy Liu was playing Watson, but I didn't realize how good she was going to be as that character. I think Elementary got really overshadowed by the BBC Sherlock at the time that it was coming out. But also, I feel like the more I hear about Elementary, the more I feel like the public opinion, at least among our friends, has kind of flipped on that. Where, you know, to the point where, like, I have not even really bothered with, I think, the third series of Sherlock. But then I just mainlined this show, and it's got a really great premise. The premise is that, Joan Watson is hired to be a sober companion for Sherlock after he gets out of rehab, for being addicted to heroin. And unlike a lot of versions of Sherlock Holmes, his addiction isn't played as a quirk. It's played as a facet of his character that I think is manifested in really interesting and cool ways. And it does something that a lot of the jerk genius shows don't ever do, which is that it shows character growth. Sherlock in the earliest episodes is kind of insufferable in that sort of way. But as his relationship with Joan develops and as his relationship with the other characters on the show develop, he really becomes an interesting character. Like he ends up having a conversation with a guy, like one of the detectives that he works with at the NYPD, and like telling him that he made a mistake, breaking up with a girl he was dating, because she was in, because she was working with internal affairs and didn't tell him. Because he talked about how he has this kind of charisma that makes people around him more like him. And instead of being like pleased with that, he really doesn't want to see them like that because he's, you know, alone and solitary and kind of flawed in a way that he recognizes. And it's a really good take on the character. The mysteries on the show are clever in, you know, they are not, I don't think, I honestly don't think they are appreciably cleverer than, say, Castle, which is a show that I feel like I've seen every episode of. They're not really that much more clever than, you know, Castle or Bones or The Mentalist or any of the millions of procedural shows on TV. But the character interaction on that show is just really, really solid. And I am, honest to God, just parroting the things that Aiden and I were talking about while we watched it and her selling me on the show. So if you haven't watched Elementary and you enjoy that kind of detective series and you want to see some really, really great stuff with Lucy Liu, who is fantastic as Watson, like genuinely amazing. It's on Hulu and it's well worth checking out. It is what I did this past week. Matt, what is your recommendation?
My recommendation is a game that you could get, I think it's actually now off of PlayStation Plus, but it's still fairly cheap on to download either on Xbox Live or PlayStation Network, and that is Super Time Force Ultra, which is looks like a very simple game. It looks like, you know, a throwback side-scroller with pixelized graphics and kind of a 16-bit feel. It's got some Mega Man gameplay mechanics. It's got some Contra gameplay mechanics. You can play as, you start with three different characters that you can play. One has like a charge beam that can shoot through walls. One has like a spread machine gun that he shoots. And then one has a shield that you can use for various things. And you can add more characters as you go. But the really big mechanic of the game is that you can stop time and reverse it, switch to another character, and then have the character that you were just playing as do whatever you did before you stopped time and reversed it. And then you can contribute to whatever that character is doing. So it's like having a 2-3-4 player game, but you're playing as all the characters by stopping time and going back. And sometimes you're just making up for mistakes you make. Like if you get shot, you stop time, go back, and prevent that from happening. Other times, like if you're fighting a boss, it's actually additive what you continue to do as you stop time and go back. So you'll be stopping time so that you can attack the boss for as long as you can. Then you stop, go back, and have another character continue to attack that boss for as long as they can. And it adds up to beating the boss before the time runs out, because there's a timer that is monitoring you throughout the level. So you have to beat the level within a certain time, but you can stop time and then go back and reverse it and get all your time back with another character. It's really interesting and surprisingly deep how those mechanics work. I've only gotten through maybe the first few levels of the game, and the more I play it, the more ways you kind of learn to use those time mechanics. It's really cool. And there have been games that do time reversal stuff, like Braid is one of them. But I really love how this one, like you reverse time and then you use a different character to add to what the previous characters did. And you yourself as a player did. I think that's really cool. And I think it works really well in the context of this game. There's one thing that I would warn people about, though. Just skip the cutscenes. They don't really add a ton to the story. They're trying really hard to be funny. And there are certain places where the comedy, the humor is just super bro-y in a way that I think is a detriment to the game. Like, it made me dislike the game, some of the occasional jokes that would pop up in the cutscenes. I would say just skip them and play the game. because the game itself is fun. The cutscenes, I don't really think, add all that much. But as far as just the gameplay alone, I think it's totally worth playing. So if you have PlayStation Network or Xbox Live and you can download Super Time Force Ultra, I would say give it a shot. All right, Chris, I think that's it for our recommendations. Let's talk about some of the comics that came out this week.
Let's do it.
All right, Chris, this was a huge, huge week for comics.
Yeah, a lot of big stuff came out. A lot of big stuff, and a lot of good stuff, too.
So we're going to limit it to three particularly good comics that came out this week. The first one that I want to talk about is the first issue of the new Jughead series from Archie.
The one I have been waiting for, Matt. You know Jughead's in the top five.
This is written by Chip Zdarsky, friend of the show, and drawn art by another friend of the show, Erica Henderson. And look, I don't want to create competition where, you know, they're working together. It's all to one big goal. It's all one company, right? But I feel like I liked this issue more than Archie number one, which I also really liked a lot.
It's really hard to say because I've really enjoyed everything that's happened in Waite and Staples Archie so far. And again, you know, Erica is a friend of mine. We've worked together on a creator-owned book before, Subatomic Party Girls. It's available on Comixology if you want to read it. And I love Jughead. Like, as a character, I like Jughead more than I like Archie. So it's hard to... Like, again, you're right. I don't want to make these two books compete, but I think Jughead has a lot going for it in that it doesn't have to do the setup work. It doesn't have to do the introductory work that Archie 1, 2, and 3 have had to do.
There's a mention that Veronica just moved in, and that's why Betty is hosting this protest that Jughead sort of nonchalantly brushes away. But then gets super into protesting the new principal of the school because he's changed the lunch menu.
Yes, because they're no longer making burgers at lunch.
What I love is how
such a great Jughead plot.
Yes, it's the lowest stakes you could imagine. But to Jughead, it's the most life or death thing that it could possibly be. It's so good.
The thing that really got me about it was the Archie stories have kind of done this a little bit. The Archie stories have done like a distinct three-act structure, but Jughead does it in a way where there's really like a three complete story structure, like the older Jughead comics would have, where there's like, you know, three eight-pagers. Because in the middle of the story, we get... Jughead passes out, like he faints from lack of hamburgers, and then has a dream sequence that's a Game of Thrones parody, which is the most Archie Comics thing you can do, is to just have a story where the cast is in a parody of a popular TV show or genre. Like, it's the most classic Archie thing that you can do. Doing that in this issue was a surprise, and I also really hope it continues, and I suspect it will. Now, I have not talked to Erica about this other than to tell her how much I loved the cover for the next issue, but they are promising Jughead's Time Police in the second issue, and I'm very, very excited about that, and I kind of feel like it's going to be the same way, it's going to be presented the same way that we got the Game of Jones parody in here.
Yeah, I liked that parody, but not as much as I like when Jughead runs to join Betty's protest and wants to kind of hijack it and make it about the lunch menu, and he quickly makes a protest sign that just says food, food on it.
Yeah, it's pretty great. It is pretty fantastic.
Yeah, I really, really liked this issue so much. You know, we're friends with Erica, we're biased, but the art in this is so good. There's a scene in here where Jughead, who is totally unaware that home ec is a class, gets taken by Betty to home ec, and then he proves himself to be a savant at making burgers. and there's just a big panel in the middle of the page where it's like a montage of Jughead making a burger. And the art in just that panel is so mesmerizingly beautiful and tells so much story in just, you know, one image. It's great. I can't say enough good things about this one issue of a comic.
It's sharp and it's clever. And one of the things that I really love about it, and this is something Erica did this on Party Girls, and she does it on Squirrel Girl as well. But just the clothes that she puts everybody in are really, really great. She has a great eye for and talent for drawing fashion on characters. And one thing that I really noticed is that usually you can pick out a character in a comic that has Erica's clothes. And in this case, I'm pretty sure it's Veronica. I'm pretty sure I have seen Erica wearing everything Veronica wears in this comic.
Yeah, it's great. If you have not picked up Jughead number one and read it, we give it our highest recommendation.
Yeah.
All right.
Plus, you get to read like a classic Sam Schwartz Jughead story reprinted in the back, which is always awesome.
From the original first issue of Jughead, which is the same thing they did in Archie number one.
Yes.
All right. The next comic that we're going to talk about is Siege number four, which seems like a weird place to jump in with a review, but we've been enjoying Secret Wars a lot up to this point. Chris has sort of backed away from talking about Secret Wars because he's writing a tie-in comic or wrote a tie-in comic that goes in with that. But we have to kind of break our silence for this because this is the issue where Chris had to IM me on GChat and freak out with me about how Ben Grimm, and spoiler alert, if you're waiting to read any of the Secret Wars stuff, maybe move ahead a little bit. The giant shield that has been keeping out zombies and Ultrons from the various areas of Battleworld is Ben Grimm.
Yes!
He is that wall.
It's Ben Grimm! Like, and it wasn't just that I had to tell you. Aiden was reading it on the couch next to me while I was working and was like, oh my god, oh my god. and I was like, what? What's going on? And she's like, read this. And she handed it to me. And yeah, like Thanos goes to the shield and says, hey, you know, are you gonna, you know, you're gonna stand up? Cause you know what Ben Grimm does? He doesn't stay down, Matt.
That's right.
Ben Grimm, he's maybe he's just too dumb and ugly to stay down.
What time is it? What
Thanos
time is
asks
it? Thanos
him what
says.
What time it is?
Oh my god!
Know what time it is. I mean, you can guess what time it is. But yeah, I got so pumped.
You see the moment of him standing up, and a little bit of the conversation between him and Thanos in Secret Wars number 6. But you get the real deep story in Siege number 4. And it's so good. It's such a good Ben Grimm moment. Look, we've talked and talked and talked on this podcast about how much we love Ben Grimm. And this comic is doing nothing to reduce that love.
Yeah, and I mean, like, one of the really cool things about it, and again, you know, I did a Secret Wars book, but if you read X-Men 92, you'll know that X-Men 92 was pretty self-contained. Like they did not, you know, feel the need to share us some details. So a lot of the stuff, I've just been experiencing it like a reader. And first of all, I did not expect Secret Wars to turn into a Fantastic Four story, and to kind of, like, even though I should have, because it's a Doctor Doom story.
Yeah.
But like that it ends up being like kind of a Fantastic Four story is one thing that I really liked. The other thing is that, you know, we know where Sue is. We know where Johnny is because Johnny's the son.
And
we know where Reed is.
We know where two Reeds are.
Yeah. We know where two Reeds are because Reed was in the life raft. And that, you know, Doom did not create a Reed Richards on his world. but like that it never even occurred to me to ask where Ben was, and he's been there. Like, he's the first thing you see in Secret Wars number two, like, and then he gets up and like, I love it, Matt. I love comic books. I love this comic book. I love Ben Grimm.
I completely concur.
When Thanos asks him, hey, like, hey, what time is it?
Yeah.
And Ben Grimm stands up and he tells him what time it is. It makes me, like, moments like that make me happy.
Yeah. Co-signed.
I don't know if that's, like, I don't know if that's Gillen expanding on Hickman's idea, or, like, surely that had to be, like, Hickman's idea. And I remember interviewing him. Like he gave me a ride home from the airport once, and I turned it into an opportunity to interview him for 3 hours. And one of the things he talked about was, like, he asked me, he was like, who do you think is the heavyweight champion of the world? You know, is it Alan Moore or Grant Morrison? He used the word heavyweight champion of the world. And he said, like, for him, it's Morrison, because Morrison has these ideas that he just reads them and laughs. And, like, he's on that, like, Hickman's on that level, where he has these ideas where you read them and you just, like, you just get excited.
Well, it's the thing that Morrison did at DC, right? Where, like, Final Crisis is in so many ways the culmination of his Batman run. Mm-hmm. And All-Star Superman ties into DC 1 million, and, like, everything's connected with everything Morrison did. And Hickman is doing that too. Like, so much of Secret Wars is connected to his Fantastic Four run, and you know, even what he was doing on, like, S.H.I.E.L.D. or Secret Warriors or whatever else he's done. Like, it's all one thing, you know?
Yeah, like, he's unbelievable. I know that I am biased and untrustworthy on this point, but God almighty, I love Secret Wars. Like, it's so good.
All right, let's talk about one last comic, Batman and Robin Eternal number one.
Yes, and this is a new weekly series. It's following up on Batman Eternal, but it's beginning in a much different place and a much, like, a very interesting place, I think.
I mean, it's a Dick Grayson story, at least this first issue is.
Yes.
And the structure is really interesting because it's presented in present day and then in flashbacks to Dick and Bruce as a team together and their work together in the early days of Batman. Now,
yeah, specifically talking about their first case against the Scarecrow.
Yeah. Now, the timeline doesn't make any sense. Because Dick Grayson is supposed to be late 20s, right?
It's hard to say, because, like this was a question that I got, I think that we got over Tumblr, where it was like, somebody was trying to figure out Batgirl, like the Batgirl of Burnside and Grayson. And it's like, wait, how old is Dick supposed to be? If Barbara's supposed to be, like, an early 20s college student, then shouldn't Dick also be, like, in his early 20s? And I think he is supposed to be a younger guy. Like, he reads to me like, you know, like Nightwing, like the teenager who was Robin for 10 years and has been Nightwing for a couple of years. But I think he's supposed to be, like, early 20s. I think he's supposed to be around the same age as Barbara.
So I guess it's believable that he as Robin here could be 16 or 17.
Yeah.
Okay. But, well, that's a logistical thing that not necessarily to get bogged down in. But I feel like, at least as far as the first issue goes, I think Batman Eternal really picked up after its first issue, because we had some problems with that first issue.
Yeah, but I feel like Batman Eternal ended up having a lot of really good ideas and a lot of, you know, doing a lot of really cool stuff, like, especially with regards to Batgirl, with regards to bringing in stuff like the Gaucho and yeah. All that. Like, those were the issues I really enjoyed.
I feel like this series, though, Batman and Robin Eternal, is the first issue was much stronger by virtue of pulling on the strings that have been set up in Batman, you know, since the New 52 started. Like, yeah. We get Bluebird here. We see Cassandra Cain showing up. And
yes, I believe this is the official return of Cassandra Cain. Because Cassandra Cain, again with the logistical stuff, Cassandra Cain's in post-New 52 comics, but they're only Grant Morrison comics that did not pay attention at all to the New 52.
Yeah. So we get Cassandra Cain showing up. We get, you know, all this stuff about Dick being a part of Spiral and Bruce having set him up for that, and now Bruce being out of communication. And the sort of the big mystery of this story is now that Bruce is not Batman anymore, as doesn't remember being Batman, some of the stuff that he did as Batman is sort of coming home to roost. And there's a part where Dick, who is trying to investigate all this weird stuff that is happening to him with Spiral, a mission goes really bad. As he's trying to investigate that, he goes to the Batcave and he finds a message from Bruce basically telling him he's sorry for the greatest mistake he ever made. Yeah. And that is how this series kicks off. Though there are some issues with the way Bruce Wayne Batman is portrayed here, I'm assuming there's going to be, you know, stuff to explain that.
Yeah, it's definitely a thing where it's like, it's definitely a last page shocker.
It's to set the hook, and I feel like this issue does a really great job of setting the hook.
In terms of that last page, can we go ahead and spoil it? If anybody doesn't want to hear it, just skip ahead a couple minutes. But the shot on the last page is of Batman with a gun having killed a kid's parents in Egypt.
Yeah.
As he came out of the movie theater. Like, essentially reenacting his own origin, but with Batman as the gunman. That's, like, obviously not going to turn out to be the thing that it looks like. Like,
right.
It could not be more obvious that this is a fake out. But in a lot of ways, like, my one big problem with the book, and I realize that this is specific to me, and I'll get to that in a second, was that I felt that wasn't so much setting the hook as it was gilding the lily. In that I was already, like, I was already hooked by that point. Like, I did
by
not
the,
need
by
that.
The message of just Bruce saying, I'm sorry for the worst mistake I ever made in that message to Dick, yeah.
By that, by Cassandra Cain coming back and Cassandra Cain having been this, you know, secret weapon that we don't know a lot about, by just, you know, all the interaction with between all the sidekick characters, I thought was really, really strong.
Yeah, there's a really good opening scene with Dick Grayson, Jason Todd, and Red Robin all working together. That's really good and really shows the differences, you know, between those three characters.
Yeah, and we should say Scott Snyder is the kind of plotter and I guess supervisor for the whole series. But this issue was actually scripted by James Tynion IV, who I think is rapidly becoming a really strong Batman writer. I really love everything that I've read of his work. He did the annual that we talked about last week that I really enjoyed. I think he does a good job with this. Tony Daniel did the pencils on this issue, and I gotta say, like, we've talked about how Batman RIP is one of my favorite stories of all time. I have some issues with Tony Daniel's art, but I think, you know, he brought it on that story. I think he's really getting better. Like, I think Batman and Robin Eternal looks really good and really dynamic in a way where I went back to kind of check and see who the artist was. Tony Daniel, to be as far into his career as he is and kind of showing, you know, the kind of improvement that he does on this issue, was a very welcome surprise to me. I really, really enjoyed the issue, even with me going on that last page, like, okay.
No, I think Tony Daniel's been getting better ever since the start of the New 52. Like, as much as I didn't like his Detective Comics run, the art was good. And I think it's only getting better. I think the hook is set in me more for this series than it was with the first issue of Batman Eternal. And I think that's only good news, that these kind of weekly events seem to be getting better as they go. All right, that's going to have to do it for our comics review segment, Chris. Let's jump into our interview with Christopher Sabella.
Let's deadbolt the door and head to the Clown Motel.
But before we do, let me remind our listeners that they can go order all their comics from Bald Eagle Comics. Just head over to baldeaglecomics.com and get 50% off all the comics you order with the coupon code AJAX, all in capital letters. Again, use the coupon code AJAX, all capital letters, at baldeaglecomics.com and get 50% off.
Joining us for the program this week is a returning guest to the show, but last time he was here, we mainly talked about his comics work. Now, we have brought him on for the very spooky purpose of talking about how he now lives in a clown motel for the next 3 weeks. Christopher Sabella, welcome back to the show. How are you? And I mean that more genuinely than I think I have ever asked anyone on this show.
I'm having an interesting time, but I would say that I'm well.
Now, for listeners who may not know, you have been to the Clown Motel before. Actually, you know what? You explain it. Explain the Clown Motel and how you came to live there.
Well, yeah, I saw it on the internet, like I think most people have at some point. I was like, well, that's interesting, a Clown Motel. And on its own, like, I wouldn't have come here. But the article I read was like, oh, not only is it a clown-themed motel in the middle of, like, this is, like, we're dead center in the middle of Nevada. About 200 miles either way from Reno or Vegas. So I was like, okay, that's sort of interesting. But they were like, oh, there's also a turn-of-the-century graveyard right next door. And I was like, ooh, okay, that's more interesting. And then they went on to say, oh, there's also an abandoned silver mine in this town. And I was like, well, who am I to resist that? But that was too good. So my friend Gina, we used to be adventure buddies when I lived in Kansas City, and we, sort of dare each other into doing dumb stuff. And somehow we got into daring each other to actually do this trip to the Clown Motel. So yeah, that was back in February, and for a weekend. And then I had to go drop Gina off in Las Vegas, and I was going to take this entirely different route to get home, because the highways out here are terrifying once the sun goes down. Long story short, I got confused. I typed something in the maps, and I was about 30 miles down the highway, and suddenly there was no more traffic behind me, and then I passed a sign saying Tonopah, 96 miles. And I was like, oh, shit, like, I screwed up. I was coming back the exact same way, and so yeah, once the sun started going down, I was like, well, I'm going to have to stay at the Clown Motel again. And I think that's when I started getting the seed of the idea that, like, wouldn't it be funny if I came and lived at the Clown Motel for a month? But I didn't want to pay for that, so I decided to do a Kickstarter. Like, I wanted society at large to sort of make me do it. And they did. And now I'm here on day 10.
Let me just make a quick note to our listeners right now. I have not put any kind of a filter on Christopher Sabella's voice. Just being in the vicinity of the Clown Motel makes you sound spooky over the phone. That's a little bit of distortion.
Do I say? Yeah.
But I'm just chalking it up to the spookiness of the Clown Motel, not Skype or the phone connection.
Okay. The reason, like, last time you were on the show pretty recently, like only maybe a month or two ago, and you joined us on Skype, and then it turns out that Tonopah, Nevada, do they just not have the internet ever, or is it only right now?
No, they have it. Like, they even have it now, but I just stepped into my room at the Clown Motel, but I'm just grabbing the camera, so they have internet. The internet here is really slow. Slow enough that I've been, more often than not, I've been logging into the open network of Tonopah Fitness, which is across across the highway. So I get better signal from a place that's like, you know, a block away than from here. So I think it's risking it on Skype was too much.
How often have you gone outside and kind of looked at the graveyard and then held your phone up and gone, huh, no bars?
No, I always hit bars. Like, that's for everything else. I always have 3G at least, except when I go to this one part of town where it suddenly just dies. The emptiest part of the town, ironically, but sorry, this is going to be a really erratic podcast. There's just a lot of weird shit going on right now. So,
I mean, I want to say we once had Jason Aaron on the show in his house while there was a gas leak, and I was not as worried about him as I am about you right now. Every time there's a break in the call, I'm like 50-50 chance Sibella's dead.
Like
50-50 chance X-Top died on the show.
Like, I would edit this. I would edit this stuff out during any other interview. I feel like this is the essence of this interview. Like, all the choppiness and the cutting out and everything. But please describe for me the weird shit that is going on right now. I am on the edge of my seat to hear what is happening.
Well, he's walking back in my direction, so I'm not going to talk about him for a second, but...
Okay. Oh, no.
Can you hear this?
I don't hear anything in the background, no.
Okay.
All right. You can tell us about it when the coast is more clear.
Man, do we have a series of yes or no questions we can ask in this interview?
Wait. He's wandering away towards these weird series of cabins behind the motel.
They're cabins? They're cabins behind the motel?
There's a graveyard and like weird cabins?
No, they're like storage sheds or something.
That's even worse!
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm looking at those. I'm looking at him walking towards them. And then closer to me is an RV that's pretty much an exact duplicate of Breaking Bad. Like, but there's no irony there. Like,
now, one of the things you've mentioned, you mentioned on Twitter, and you mentioned it when you called into the Best Show, which is something that I want to talk about in a little bit. You mentioned that you legitimately felt like you might have been a potential kidnapping victim at one point in your stay in Tonopah?
Yeah, that was a couple nights ago. I went out. It was around 11 or midnight, and I went out for a walk. I've been working while I'm here for like writing stuff, and I was sort of stuck on a thing, so I went for a walk, and I get like a block and a half away, 2 blocks away, and you know, it's at that point in the night, like there's very few cars coming back and forth. There's just like one every 5 minutes, maybe. So I'm walking, and then this creepy, loud, rumbling pickup truck like drives past me and then slows down. Like, the brake lights go on, and then it pulls off to the side of the road, like in front of me, a couple car lengths ahead. And it just sat there. And I like stopped and then was like, nope, I'm okay. And I turned around and walked back to, like, the irony is at the time, motel was the safe alternative to walking the streets. Because I'm pretty sure, like, they were going to, I don't know what they were going to do, but it was about as creeped out as I've been, except for this drunk cowboy.
So
he's coming back for some reason.
Please tell me if I'm misunderstanding, but it sounds like, and I've been following your tweets about your stay at the Clown Motel religiously. And
it's for something.
Yeah. Despite the set dressing of all the clown stuff, and you know, you tweeted room 237 out the other night.
How did you not get that room, by the way?
it doesn't exist.
Oh.
I photoshopped it.
Well, thanks for ruining it. Thanks for ruining the illusion.
But there was a clown on the door. You put a clown on the door and all that stuff. But
No. The clown on the door is real.
Okay. You just put the number on the door.
Yeah, I just swapped the numbers around.
But is the clown stuff just set dressing for the weird shit that happens in the desert? Because I have a very limited experience of experiencing weird shit in the desert, and I've had about my fill of it.
Mm-hmm.
But you were just saying that the clown motel was the safer alternative to just walking down the road, and you're talking about a Breaking Bad trailer. Like, is the true, like, insanity, the true creepy stuff, not that it's a clown motel, but just that you're in the smack middle of Nevada in the desert?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And that's the one aspect I never even considered, and I don't know why. The last time I was here, it was all super pleasant and, like, nothing weird happened with, like, people. But this time, like, I guess since I've locked in, I'm way more aware of it. There's a super methy guy who's, like, working around me, wearing a Superman shirt, but it's clearly, like, tweaking or something. So there's a lot of, like, just oddly rough characters everywhere you go.
So do you think that that is a fun... Now, you got there on September 30th.
The 29th.
September 29th. Now, the big question that I had... I'm a Kickstarter backer. I have, you know, I have given you a name to whisper. Which, by the way, mm-hmm. If you missed out on this Kickstarter, you missed out on something special. Because there's a blog that you're updating that is password protected for backers. One of the rewards was that you would whisper our names either in the graveyard or in the motel itself. But then when the backer survey came out, you specified that it could be anyone's name. And I had a real long think, Sabella. I want you to know this. I had a real long think about whose name I wanted whispered in the clown motel. I thought about Matt.
Sure.
I settled on Chad. So at some point you will be whispering Chad's name in the clown motel. I am considering that his Christmas present. But now you're not staying through Halloween, correct?
Right. I'm leaving right before Halloween. And it's not because I'm scared. It's because I screwed up schedule wise. And I have a con in Tacoma, Washington that is on Halloween. So they were nice enough to give us a room and a free table. So I didn't want to, like, oh, sorry, I can't be there. I'm in a motel. So I just adjusted, pushed everything forward a little. Also, I think it helped just because the closer I got to, like, actually having to do it, the more I was like, oh, God, what am I doing? So I think, like, pushing it up was like, well, you have no choice. You have to leave tomorrow morning or everything's going to be screwed up. I'll be here.
I got to say, as someone who – I've kickstarted stuff that, you know, has taken years to come out. I've kickstarted stuff and then been, like, surprised 6 months later. You moved into the clown motel while the Kickstarter was going on.
You haven't gotten the
money yet.
No. This is all out of pocket right now.
What I was getting at is you've been there. This is day 10. As we are recording this, this is day 10 in the clown motel.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time. Like, think
it is.
Like, I think about things like San Diego, you know, things like, you know, New York Comic Con is just happening this weekend. And those are like, you know, 4 and 5 day shows. And that is, as they say in Akewood, 3 days is long enough for an ad hoc culture to form.
Yeah.
Like, do you remember your life before you were there? Like, do you find yourself thinking of the Clown Motel as home yet?
No. I joke about it because, I mean, for all intents and purposes, it is for the next 20 days. But, But no, I think fondly of my apartment, and I'm anxious to go back there. I think at least once a day, I think to myself, like, what's the route I'm going to take to get back home? Even though, you know, it's 3 weeks away, which is just like, I don't know. I think it's easier for me to not, like, to just take it a day at a time. Mm. Like, saying that shit out loud is, like, really daunting. So I try to keep it bite-sized.
Matt, can I sidebar with you for a second?
Okay. Christopher, close your ears for a second.
Matt, we're pretty certain that when he leaves the Clown Motel, he's just going to drive 3 hours and find himself back at the Clown Motel, right? Like, we're sure that's happening.
Or he's going to, you know, come to embrace the Clown Motel and not want to leave and sign up for another month.
Okay. You can uncover your ears again. X-Dot, okay. We're back.
I'm back.
Okay. Let me ask you this, because I find this curious. You've talked about some of the people you've run into and encountered, and we talked about Halloween. Is there, like, any kind of function or celebration of Halloween at the Clown Motel? Do the management there play anything up as creepy, or do they present it as, like, wholesome, fun clowns?
From what I gather, and I have not done a full investigation, but I'm back in the Clown Motel room. From what I gather, it's not like they bought the motel as a clown motel. I don't think they're particularly into clowns. It was just like, well, we got a thing, let's just roll with it. So no, there are no. Everywhere else in this town is decorating for Halloween. The casino I keep going to, like, they got severed hands, and, like, they gave a tape, they put a tape on the, like, 10-foot bear that they have in the lobby, and they gave it a sword. But no, here it's just business as usual. Like, they got their hook, so I don't think they really have to dress it up much.
Now, you've talked about people visiting you. That was something Matt brought up. Now, you also had a visit. You've one of the Kickstarter rewards, I think you had two people sign up to come visit with you in the Clown Motel.
Yeah.
And in addition to those, friend of the show, our close personal friend, Carla Pacheco, who was doing something almost as ridiculous as what you're doing, which is she drove across the country stopping only at Sonic.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so weird.
She also stopped at a restaurant where she got a 72-ounce steak.
And didn't finish.
Yeah, she brought me the remaining 32 ounces. But then as soon as she handed it to me, she's like, I'm sure it's still good, even though it's been in the car for a day.
Yeah, that sounds like Carla.
So I threw that out. Yeah.
I texted Carla because she put up a picture of her arriving at the Clown Motel, and I think it was actually at the casino because she was in front of the big bear.
Yeah.
And she was wearing a t-shirt with her face on it, her own mm-hmm. face. And I just texted her. I was like, Carla, this is the most on-brand thing you have ever done. Like, carrying 32 ounces of unfinished steak while wearing a shirt with your own face on it.
Yeah, you didn't mention the bag of fireworks she had, too, which I now have, because I don't know why, but now I have all these fireworks that she bought at South of the Border, or is that what it's called?
Yes, and that actually leads me to a follow-up question.
Okay.
Are you going to do a follow-up to this project where you spend a summer month living at South of the Border, or is that something that Matt and I can go ahead and plan for our next Kickstarter?
That's all yours. I have no affinity for racism motels, nor that's a long drive away. At least, like, Tonopah is only a 12.5-hour drive. I don't think I'm ever going to do anything like this ever again.
do you think so, because Like, that's a very ominous way of putting that. Like, this is the last time I'll do something like this.
Yes. You can take it as that if you like. I choose to take it as that, but I've come to my senses, and I'm not going to do this, like, anymore. Like, this is the one time I've done something this dumb and just, like, committed this hard to it. And, yeah, I'm learning some stuff about myself, and I'm going to, like, put that into action moving forward.
Now, I don't know if we actually mentioned this in the discussion, but the Kickstarter was not just for you to stay at the hotel. Like, that is not the end result of the Kickstarter. You are, in fact, writing a book called I Live in a Clown Motel. Now, as I said before, there's a you are doing not daily updates, considering the internet situation, but you're doing regular updates on a site, and I have read them. And I got to say, I'm a fan of your comics. I like, you know, I like your comics. I like your tweets. The prose you are writing about your experiences at the Clown Motel is next level. I love it. And I wish if anybody out there backed the Kickstarter and hasn't checked that out yet, go do yourself a favor and read those updates. They are fantastic. And if you haven't, I genuinely cannot wait for people to get that book and read it. It's so weird and entertaining and like dark. it's like if Night Vale was real. Which is a weird thing.
I'm glad. I was kind of afraid, like, because, you know, I feel like, you know, a majority of people gave money because, you know, it's like, oh, you're going to, you know, and this is like what other people have said. Other, you know, media outlets have described this as like the scariest motel in America. So I was like, well, I feel like people are going to be disappointed because I've stayed here before. And it's like, it's not, you know, there aren't ghosts that I have seen. There aren't, like, you know, people as clowns wandering around. Like, it's just a really weird idea for a motel in the middle of nowhere. Like, it's not just a clown motel. It's like the sum of its parts. Like, it's this whole town. And, like, I don't know. I was just, like, afraid. I was like, well, like, I have to, like, keep the terror up or something. But, yeah, the longer I've been here, it's just like, you know, I'm just going to, like, things are sufficiently odd enough that I don't have to, like, the Room 237 thing I did, like, that was just an idea I've had since I got here. So, but, yeah, I've been, you know, and I am definitely prone to exaggeration sometimes, but in those updates, I'm pretty honest, like, especially compared to, like, Twitter, where, like, you know, half my tweets might be a lie or a strong exaggeration.
Is this your first time living in a hotel for more than a week or two? Because I there's something weird just about the experience of living in a hotel. Like, I did a stretch of living in an extended stay in the Atlanta area for a work thing. And that was an extraordinarily weird experience. And I wasn't even in a weird place. So is there a part of it that's just like the weird experience of living in a hotel for a long time?
Yeah, that's a large part of it for me. It's like, yeah, I just lived in this like single room, with two beds for some reason. Like, that's weird. I've gotten used to it mostly, but yeah, all I have is like two beds, a mini fridge, a tube TV that was probably really cool in like 1992, and a microwave. And that's it. Like, that's like, I can't go into another room except for the bathroom. But, yeah, this is like the longest I've ever, like, I've stayed at several motels like in succession, but I don't think it's been for this long. Like, this is probably, outside of like trips to Europe and stuff, like, this is the longest quote unquote vacation I've ever had. So yeah, that a lot of it is just like getting used to the fact that, like, oh yeah, like, you know, occasionally someone comes in and like cleans and makes your bed. There's always like you know, every night the parking lot fills up, and then every morning everybody's gone, except for me. I don't know. And like I stay up late, so I mean I was up till like 4:30 in the morning this morning, and like I heard one of the housekeepers like walking by because I recognize her cough now. So I was like, okay, well, I should probably go to bed because Pam is awake. So yeah, it's an odd experience just on that level before you even factor in everything else.
Well, that's the thing that I like about how you're presenting it, because it's not horrifying. Like, you didn't open the door to the hotel room and there wasn't like a clown with a bloody knife in there, although there was a blood stain on the ceiling.
Yes.
Which... turned out to be, I believe, from following your Twitter, turned out to be fake blood, which, as you said, raises more questions.
No, that's different. There's fake blood on the curtain and on the baseboard, but I found what I believe to be real blood on the ceiling because it's black. But I've had people on Twitter, you know, saying, "Oh no, that's probably just nail polish or whatever." But somebody from Twitter mailed me luminol. So maybe I'll find out before the 30 days is up.
I would be like, if I were you, I would throw that in the trash. I'd like, cause that is a bliss of ignorance that I would not want to know is putting luminol around the clown hotel. but the way that you presented in what you've written so far, it's not horrifying. It's not terrifying. It's not scary. It's just, everything is unsettling. Like everything,
yeah.
Every aspect of what you are doing is unsettling in a really enjoyable and funny way. I think, you know, it rides that line between, you know, scary and funny in a really cool way.
Yeah, no, it's largely unsettling. Like, I really look forward to breakfast because, like, that's the time where I can like go to an actual restaurant and like feel like a human being for a little bit. And then once that's over, then it's like, okay, well, I'm back on duty, I guess. Cause it's like, you know, I can hang out. By and large, I've been hanging out in the room and working. I've discovered a secondary location at the casino, which is this like gazebo that's right next to the DMV and the one grocery store in town. So I still get, like, weirdos, like, it's just, I don't know, I've been going through a lot of phases, like, where I think, like, I've reached a level of acceptance with what's happening, and then something will happen, and I'm unsettled again, so.
I think the real question of how you're doing in the Clown Motel, you talked about staying up really late, but when you finally do go to bed, are you sleeping okay?
No, because this place, I guess I forgot, they don't have, like, hotel-style drapes here. It's just these diaphanous curtains. So, like, they pride themselves on, like, having, you know, like, it's a well-lit motel. Like, once, you know, once they close for the evening, like, there's lights on everywhere sort of surrounding the doors and stuff. So even when I go to bed, like, there's, you know, the sodium vapor lamps, like, I can see through the curtain. And then in the morning, like, you know, the sun basically rises facing my window. So yeah, the room just fills up with light, and I'm used to, like, the way I've been able to maintain my messed up schedule is that I have, like, blackout drapes at home. So even if I'm going to bed at, like, as the sun is coming up, it's the light. It's not going to mess with me. But here, short of like putting tinfoil on my windows, which is like a thing I am not prepared to do. Like, yeah, it's just like I went to bed this morning probably around 5, and then I was up a couple times, and like then I would try. Robert Wilson, who I'm working on a comic with, he was nice enough to send me a sleep mask from Amazon, which has helped a little bit, but I'm not used to sleeping with something on my face, so I tend to rip it off. So yeah, I'm not super well rested. I'm going to start getting into naps more. So I took a nap yesterday, and I felt really amazing when I woke up. So I think I'm going to like see how that works, and maybe I can find a balance where I'm not like constantly exhausted.
I like that it is affecting your sleep patterns.
I mean,
I don't like that because I'm worried about you and I care about you, but...
Mm-hmm. It's a nice cherry on top.
One last thing before we kick it over to Twitter questions. I do want to mention that you called into the best show with Tom Sharpling this week. Mm-hmm. Something that I am a huge fan of, obviously. We've talked about it on the show multiple times before. Tom's taken a lot of callers over the years. Tom has taken calls from people who are, like, going into surgery, people who have been through natural disasters. I have never heard him more concerned. He sounded so upset talking to you. He told you to call back in a week and to make sure you were alive.
Yeah. That's kind of the best part of, like, anything that's happened in the last 10 days was that phone call, especially getting the invite to call back. Like, as far as I'm concerned, like, you know, all the crappy stuff that's happened is kind of worth it because I get to call the best show again.
If people have not listened to last week's episode of the best show yet, just listen to it because he's, like, it's rare to hear him that upset. Like, it is rare to hear him, like, that kind of disturbed by a thing that a caller is telling him. With that, I think
if I can just add.
No, please go ahead.
He was super excited in the email, because Matt Fraction, you know, is friends with him, which I still will never forgive Matt for, because I like Tom first. But so Matt, like, put us in touch, and Tom, like, wrote back, "Oh my God," in all caps, and, like, I was like, "I'll give you the secret number. Can you call in tonight?" Like, so he was super excited about it. And then, I think, like, faced with everybody, including myself, when faced with the reality of it, it became slightly less exciting and more concerning.
I don't know if he was prepared for there to be a graveyard next door. I don't know if he was prepared for the story of how you were about to get bundled into a van. Like,
yeah.
Because, again, writing about this stuff and tweeting about this stuff, you just present everything as a minor inconvenience. Like, oh, there's blood on the ceiling. Oh, there was a creepy van lingering outside the hotel room.
That's how, you know, people are driven mad, is by a series of minor inconveniences, so.
Well, Christopher Sabella joining us live from the Clown Motel. I think it is time that we kick it over to our listeners, because we have... It has been months since we had a response on Twitter like the one we have tonight. Matt, if people want to get in on the interviews that we do each and every week here on War Rocket Ajax, how can they go about that?
I like to have fun with these tosses to the Twitter questions on the show a lot of weeks. This time, I'm just going to be totally sincere and honest and tell our listeners to... stay somewhere safe. Take care of yourselves. Get some rest. Don't do anything that could potentially harm you or others. And once you have ensured your personal safety, then go to twitter.com. If you don't have an account, sign up for one. Follow the Matt D. Wilson, that's me, and the ISB, that's Chris. Wait until Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 6:30 Pacific. That's when one of us will put out the call for questions for our guest. Questions like you're about to hear for Christopher Sabella, who I would also like to be very aware of his own safety and well-being.
I think maybe the key takeaway is, why are you going for walks at midnight? Do not do that. But Matt, what are our Twitter questions?
The first question I'm going to ask comes from friend of the show and participant in the Secret Convergence on Infinite Podcasts, another L on Twitter, L Collins. L wants to know, not counting clowns that originated in horror, such as Pennywise from It, what famous clowns are the scariest?
Well, there's, of course, Pogo, John Wayne Gacy. Which makes me think that might be the person who sent me the John Wayne Gacy book without putting their name on it, because that's a package that I've gotten since I've been here.
No! No! Oh, Lord.
The package, like,
yeah.
If you are not following at Xtop on Twitter, go look, we didn't really talk about him. Go look at the packages he's been getting. Just sent Christopher Smill a care of the Clown Motel. Just go look at what is in there. Because again, Luminol, I think, is the weirdest one, but it's not the scariest one.
Yeah. I think there's an argument.
I got an empty envelope today. I had to look up the zip code, but it's from El Paso, Texas. Somebody mailed me an empty envelope. So I don't know if that's a threat or what, or they just forgot. They were so excited to mail me when I specifically told people to stop mailing me stuff.
I feel like John Wayne Gacy originated in horror, but I'll take the answer. All right. The next question is from our friend Ken Lowry, who snuck onto the show back at HeroesCon. He asks, when you launched the Kickstarter, how convinced were you that it would succeed, and how much did you want it to?
I didn't think it would succeed, and I kind of half didn't want it to. I launched it at like noon on Labor Day, so my preparations were zero. I was sort of mentioning to people that I was working on a Kickstarter for the Clown Motel, but like, I didn't have a plan of action. I made the video for it like literally the night before, and I thought like, okay, I'll set it for this date, and like maybe I'll raise the $4,500 by then. But yeah, I mean, like half of me was like hoping, like, I hope I don't, like, because I don't want to. I kind of don't want to do this. I mean, I do, but I also like, you know, that's why I put it in the hands of people. Like, then it's no longer my choice. It's other people's choices. But yeah, I was not expecting the response that I got, which was that it got funded in 4 hours.
The next question comes from The Only Trout on Twitter. What is the worst and or scariest motel you've ever stayed at that wasn't clown related?
I know this one. It's a motel in Omaha, Nebraska, and I went there. I can't remember. It was a long while ago, but I went there and got a room, checked it in. And I didn't know anything about Omaha at that point. Like, my mom had just moved there like 2 years before. So I was like surprising her for like Mother's Day or something. And part of the surprise was like, I wasn't getting in until really late. So I was like, well, I'll just like look up a motel and I'll stay at that motel. And like, a cab driver took me there, and it was like, I picked probably the worst motel you could have. Like, the desk clerk was behind bulletproof glass, like in a little booth, and wasn't coming out for anything. And then the room itself, it didn't have a deadbolt. It had a ring on a chain, and you put the ring over your doorknob. So if somebody like kicked through the, you know, just like doorknob lock, there was this chain that was supposed to keep them from getting all the way in. But like, all you need is like a stick. Like, if you crack the door open, you just use a stick to shove the ring off. So yeah, I was like in that room watching Hellraiser 3 on cable, and like, people were like violently fist fighting in the hallway. So that's the scariest motel I've ever been.
That's pretty good. That's pretty scary.
Yeah.
The next question is from Arthur Wyatt, also a friend of the show and former guest. Do you ever feel sorry for legit, non-murdersome, and non-supernatural clowns?
Feel sorry for them?
The reputation of clowns as being creepy, scary characters.
I guess, yeah. I mean, because I feel like most clowns aren't doing it to freak people out. Like, they, you know, aren't trying to make people happy, but... the drunk is back. It's weird because the sheriff showed up, but I guess he didn't take him off. I guess I kind of feel bad for clowns, but you know, like, it's not like any clown got into it, like, not knowing what their reputation was. So, I don't feel super sorry for them because they knew what they were getting into.
I feel bad for clowns all the time.
That's fair.
Because I like, Matt, you know I like going to the circus.
Sure.
We've talked about it before.
We have.
I'm a man who enjoys the circus to, a healthy extreme. And I think, like, circus clowns are hilarious.
I'm indifferent to clowns.
The next question is from Champ Superstar on Twitter. If a ghost or a clown invaded your room, what would you grab first and run away with?
I guess my bag with my laptop. I should prepare. That brings up a good point that I should prepare a bug out bag. Because all my stuff is just scattered everywhere, so I should like prepare one solid bag that's my grab and run. But yeah, I guess my laptop more than anything, because that has all my actual like work that allows me to come spend a month in the clown motel in it.
Yeah, I just wouldn't open up one of the vents and put your bug out bag in there because
no.
That's just asking for trouble. I think this may be our last question. This is from Wrapping Concrete on Twitter, and I didn't get to a lot of the questions. Many of them are about the creepiest clowns and what makes a clown creepy and so forth. But this one is from Wrapping Concrete. We may have already covered this, but he wants to know, what's the creepiest piece of mail a stranger has sent you during your stay? Was it the John Wayne Gacy book, or was it something else?
The Gacy book was creepy because it's the first thing I got, and it had no name on it, and there was, you know, it came with like this slip, and all it said at the bottom of the slip was "Sweet Dreams," and then there were like three / but they were like placed like weirdly, so it like that just like it's not unsettling on its own, but like as a whole package, that kind of was like, okay, who is doing that? Like the empty envelope was definitely off-putting. Yesterday, I came back to the room and there were two packages like on my table. But I spoke to the housekeeper today and she was like, oh, I just put it in there. So like, that's okay. But like walking into your room and there's like two packages from you don't know who, is a little bit disturbing. It's all disturbing. Like I'm terrified of like every day what the mail's going to bring.
All right. I think that's going to have to do it for our Twitter questions.
We have so many more questions, but I honestly don't think we're going to top "I'm terrified every day of what the mail is going to bring" as a closing line.
Christopher Sabella, if people want to follow your further adventures at the Clown Motel through the end of the month, through October 30th, where can they follow you on Twitter and otherwise find you online?
Yeah, the best place to follow the whole saga is on Twitter. I'm at Xtop, X-T-O-P. Yeah, the only other thing I'm really updating is the password protected blog. But if you didn't give money to it, then you can't see it because that's them's the breaks. But I will at some point after everybody gets their books, I'll figure something out and I'll probably sell it to the general public. So there will be a book for you to read in about 3 to 4 months, maybe.
Right, well, I cannot wait. Stay safe, Chris. Do not go.
I will
go walking at night anymore, please.
No, I'm not doing that anymore. Just worn off it.
Just, you know, find something to watch on that old CRT TV that you have.
I will.
Apparently
they're getting flat screens though. So I might get a full flat screen while I'm here, which is pretty exciting.
Wow, you are going to experience major changes in the in the Clown Hotel.
Have you tried to watch modern day TV on a tube TV at any point recently? Because it's really hard to do.
No, but weirdly enough, My girlfriend and I sat down to watch The Flash and iZombie this week and found out that my local CW station is broadcasting in SD. which is even weirder.
Yeah, but at least there you can see the whole image. Like, all the stuff that comes through the TV is all, you know, HD. So all you can see is the dead center of the image, and everything on the sides is chopped off. So it's like watching, like, a weird interpretation of what TV should look like. So I haven't watched much TV, but it's a baffling experience living in our glorious future like we do.
Well, I hope you get the upgrade. I hope something makes your stay a little more pleasant. Our guest has been Christopher Sabella at Xtop on Twitter. He is living in a clown motel. Follow him, because if you don't tweet for a few hours, I get a little nervous, buddy. Happy Halloween, and thank you for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Thank you once again to Christopher Sabella for calling in from the clown motel. We hope he's doing okay as you hear this. Now it's time. Matt, what do we do at this part of the show? Time has lost meaning for me, so I don't know what we're doing at this part.
This week, we are doing a listener question. And this question comes from line stepper Timothy Barnett, sent to us via email. And it's a spooky Halloween question. With Chris not able to write about Marvel for Comics Alliance, and with Halloween right around the corner, do you have any spooky Marvel bizarre back issues you can recommend? What, like, Chris, off the top of your head, do you know of any good horror-themed or Halloween-themed or, you know, monster-themed back issues that people may not know?
Every issue of Tomb of Dracula. All 70 issues. Of Tomb of Dracula. That is my spooky recommendation, as it is always.
Anything that might be like a little more off the beaten path, or something where a superhero fights a spooky monster or anything like that?
The thing about Marvel Comics is that even when they're spooky Marvel Comics, they're still Marvel Comics. So yeah. They never quite get as scary as you want them to be. Like, I think that's the thing that really draws me to, like, Tomb of Dracula, is that, you know, it tries to create an atmosphere, and that Gene Colan art really does create an atmosphere. And then in number 50, he fights the Silver Surfer, yes. Which is great. But, you know, other comics, like, you know, there's that Marvel Premiere issue that had the Legion of Monsters in it, like, from the late 70s. Like, that's just the Champions, but with monsters.
Yeah, I feel like we've covered a lot of the kind of like genuinely horror atmosphere horror comics, or like here's a monster in a Marvel comic stuff in the Every Story Ever list, like the Captain America Baron Blood two-parter.
Yeah, where that one's really good.
That Blood one's really good. Blood on the Moors. Yeah, you know. The Captain Britain versus Dracula story.
Vampire State. That one's awesome.
And the X-Men versus Dracula story.
If you have not read the later Marvel Zombies miniseries, Marvel Zombies 4, which was by Fred Benlenti and Kev Walker, and Marvel Zombies 5, which was by Fred Benlenti and Kano, those are great. They're like really funny and kind of horrifying and in a way that the first couple of Marvel Zombies miniseries are just like kind of over the top gross out comedy. Like, these are over the top horror superhero stories, because it's about that. It's about the Marvel Zombies coming to the Marvel Universe and having to be fought off by essentially Machine Man and Howard the Duck. Like, next wave ass Machine Man and Howard the Duck.
Yeah, that is, to my knowledge, those stories are the only other, like, major appearances of the next wave version of Machine Man.
Well, he's in that Ms. Marvel run that Brian Reed did, too.
Okay, but by the time, like, he really rolled around in anything else, he was back to being kind of classic Machine Man. And not the next wave version, but he is so the next wave version in Marvel Zombies.
Yeah, it's in a really great way. And I feel like those stories, because they were, you know, the third and fourth sequels, to Marvel Zombies. Like at that point, it really kind of felt like they were milking it. But they're really good. Like a lot of people, I think, might have overlooked those. But it's Fred Benlenti and Kev Walker and Kano. It's like really, really solid Marvel horror stuff. And they're gross and they're funny and they're action packed. Just really, really solid.
I think that's going to be our answer to Timothy's question. Timothy, I'm sorry we didn't have any like real hidden gems that we haven't discussed on the show before for you, but those are some things you can go seek out at the very least.
I mean, the original Bloodstone miniseries is fun, but it is, again, it is not scary.
All right. If you would like to send us a listener question, you can do what Timothy did and send it to us via email at our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is also where you can send us Word Heavyweight Champions lists and Every Story Ever lists. Also, if you would like to sponsor the show, you can let us know there at our email address. You can also send us questions at our Tumblr, which is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. Be sure to check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. Be sure also to check us out on iTunes. If you go to iTunes and you search for War Rocket Ajax, that's where you'll find the show. If you like the show, leave us a review there. The more positive reviews we get, the more we are featured on iTunes, which is good for us and for you, the listeners, because we get to do more of the show the more listeners we have. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places that you can find us on the internet. For me, all you have to do is go to about.me/MattDWilson, and you will find links to all my stuff, including Copernicus Jones Robot Detective, which is available on Comixology, 7 issues that you can buy right now. Chris, where can everybody find all your stuff?
Just head over to about.me/ChrisSims. That's ChrisSims. And you will find links there to all the stuff I have done, including comics on Comixology and Twitter, Tumblr, and all that good stuff. Thank you for listening. I hope you're having a very spooky October in a good way, in a fun way. This has been War Rocket Ajax number 275. We will be back next week with another great show, so be here for that, and have a great week, everybody.
Yeah! Flash.
Halloween.